Can I or can't I enjoy the fire pit with family and friends? From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Friday, July the 2nd, and this is In the Moment. In a couple of days, we celebrate our nation's independence. For some, that means camping and hanging out with family and friends, which might include utilizing a fire pit. But wait, there are burn bans in effect. Lincoln County specifically, we talk with its emergency management coordinator. We take a look at the South Dakota Historical Society's History 605 podcast and get to know historian Ben Jones. And as we flip the calendar to July, new laws go into effect here in South Dakota. One of them has the state's youngest drivers facing new rules. What exactly does the partnership between Augustana School of Music and the South Dakota Symphony look like? We're broadcasting live today from the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. I'm Chris Loffrey. Lori Walsh is off today. You're in the moment. News is first.
And with SDPB News, I'm Kyle Ireland. Legal marijuana sales are happening in South Dakota's borders for the first time. But it's only for medical purposes, and there's only one place to shop so far. SDPB's Seth Tupper has more.
The Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe is the first seller of medical marijuana in the state. Native Nations Cannabis is a tribal business that began sales Thursday. That's the day a new state law legalizing medical marijuana took effect. Alex Cheddar is one of the first customers. He drove to Flandreau 40 miles from his home in Sioux Falls.
I came here to get some medical marijuana, I guess, to exercise my rights.
Nobody else in the state is selling medical marijuana. That's because the state health department is not ready to start issuing medical cards yet. The tribe has its own government and doesn't have to wait for the state. So it prepared to open immediately when the new law took effect. Eric Hagen is the CEO of Native Nations Cannabis.
The first day is good. We've had more patients than expected. I think it's been a huge success for not only the tribe, but also the state of South Dakota. I'm glad that we're open.
The tribe requires patients to have a valid doctor's recommendation. Hagen says the tribe also accepts licenses from other states that have medical marijuana programs.
We've been seeing a wide variety, tribal members, non-tribal members, every age group that you could think of has been through the doors today. It's been a good turnout.
Non-tribal dispensaries can sell medical marijuana once the state health department starts issuing licenses and medical cards. The department will announce a process for that by the end of October. Meanwhile, a voter-approved measure to legalize recreational marijuana is tied up in a lawsuit. With Jordan Henderson, I'm Seth Tupper for South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Governor Kristi Noem is defending her decision to accept a donation toward a South Dakota National Guard deployment. A foundation connected to billionaire Tennessee businessman Willis Johnson donated $1 million to the state. Noem is using it to send as many as 50 Guard troops into Texas to help defend the U.S. border with Mexico. Noem, a Republican, took questions from reporters on Thursday at a public event in Sioux Falls. She responded to an allegation from the state Democratic Party that she's turning Guard soldiers into mercenaries for hire.
That's not it at all. The donation comes into the state's general fund. The legislature will decide where to appropriate that into, and we're believing into the emergency and disaster fund, which there it'll be delegated and used as the state deems appropriate. This is something that has happened over the years at different times with different contributions that have come into the state, is how to get that to the entity involved. Happens quite often.
Critics say the state frequently handles donations, but rarely, if ever, accepts donations for a military mission. Some legal scholars say the donation could be illegal if the donor instigated and directed Noem's decision to deploy troops. Noem says she was already making plans to deploy the Guard when Johnson offered a surprise donation. The governor says she has no prior connection with Johnson. And in today's weather, we have mostly sunny skies in the west with breezy conditions and gusts as high as 28 miles an hour. Sunny and hot in the northeast with sunny skies in the southeast. Going into tonight, we're expecting partly cloudy skies in the west with the wind gusts to continue, and mostly clear skies in the east with windy conditions growing. We have highs in the 90s across the state, with the northeast reaching nearly 100 degrees. Lows in the mid-60s across the board. For SDPB, I'm Kyle Ireland.
And I'm Chris Loffrey in today for Lori Walsh. A burn ban is in place for several South Dakota counties, including Lincoln. What exactly does a burn ban mean and who does it affect? Harold Timmerman is the county's emergency management coordinator and joins us today by phone. Harold, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about our burn ban.
What factors go into the issuance of a burn ban, and are they relatively similar from county to county?
I believe they're somewhat similar. How the burn ban is activated may differ according to the residence resolution or the document that was approved by the county commission. Ours in Lincoln County, I work in conjunction with the fire chiefs and get their thoughts on whether we should or should not have a burn ban. And they've all said we should, and I agreed with them, so we did enact our burn ban.
So that kind of really answers my next thought. There is a specific group of people in Lincoln County, per se, that determine whether or not a burn ban is necessary then, right?
Yes.
So let's get into what the burn ban means, especially on this holiday weekend with people camping and such. For example, fire pits, can they be used? Do they have to be designated fire pits, or could they be makeshift?
We want to have designated fire pits. As an example, in our state park, Newton Hills, they have designated fire pits there, which can be used even during a burn ban. What we really are trying to keep from happening is people in rural areas that have a large hole or pit dug, and then they like to put trees or buildings they've torn down in those pits and burn them. And that's what can cause us trouble, because in a pit like that with large trees or even construction material, the fire embers burn in there for several days after the fire is actually out, or you think it's out. And when we have a windy condition come up or the wind changes, embers come out of there and can start a fire very easily with the conditions that we have now.
Okay, let's stay rural. Burn barrels, if you will. People still use those 55-gallon drums to burn their trash, let's say. Are those in compliance?
They're in compliance. And if we get into extreme drought or red flag conditions, which is put out by the Weather Service and our state fire climatologist, then they can still use them, but they have to cover them with a screen no larger than a quarter-inch mesh.
If you're just joining us, our guest today is Harold Timmerman. He's Lincoln County's Emergency Management Coordinator. We're talking about burn bans, and there's a burn ban in effect for Lincoln County. Other counties in South Dakota include Beadle, Kingsbury, Brookings, Girald, Minor, Brule, Aurora, Hanson, McCook, Turner, and Bonham, along with Lyon County in Minnesota. In the couple of minutes we have left, as we both know, there's a holiday weekend ahead of us, and it includes fireworks. Now, let's talk fireworks and where they fall into a burn ban in Lincoln County.
In the rural areas of Lincoln County, we do not regulate fireworks. Mm-hmm. Several municipalities have, and some have changed their conditions a little bit. We cannot prohibit fireworks in the rural area according to our resolution that we have passed, and it would be hard to police something like that should it be in there. And we don't want to inhibit the fireworks folks that sell all these things from making their sales on a once a year time basis, but we would sure want to ask anybody that is going to use these fireworks and shoot them to be extremely careful and have water by them and wet down the area that you're using as your launch pad too.
Are there different levels to a burn ban, or is a burn ban a burn ban? There's not like a burn ban level 1, 2, 3 or things like that.
No, the burn ban in effect covers everything. Like I said, but those burn barrels are still allowed to be used, and authorized fire pits in a campground can still be used too.
My last question is, Lincoln County gets into the city of Sioux Falls. Does this burn ban affect the residents that reside within the city limits of Sioux Falls but are still in Lincoln County?
No, it doesn't. None of our ordinance affects any of our municipalities. within the county at all, and that includes the city of Sioux Falls, south of 57th Street.
Harold Timmerman is our guest today. He's Lincoln County's Emergency Management Coordinator. Harold, thank you so much for being on with us today. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, sir.
Up next, we better understand the new laws for South Dakota's youngest drivers. Dan Lusk from the Department of Public Safety is with us. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Julie Rose. Join me for a special episode of Top of Mind marking Independence Day. A vexillologist, that's a flag expert, explains why so many countries use the colors red, white, and blue. And we'll consider how Americans have always used the Constitution to justify competing visions of what America stands for. It's Top of Mind.
Monday, July 5th at noon Central and again at 7 Central on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting South Dakota teachers and students with classroom resources, field trips, and professional development. Learn more at sanfordlab.org.
Hey everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace. You know, we talk a lot on this show about people's careers and how they do what they do. And whenever people flip the script on me and ask me how I do my job, I tell them that what I do on a day-to-day basis would not be possible if it were not for the support of public radio listeners. It's because of you that Marketplace is able to report on the business and economic news that affects all of our lives every single day. So thank you for supporting our program and your local public radio station. We appreciate it.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Chris Lawfrey, in today for Lori Walsh. July 1st is when new laws here in South Dakota take hold, and well, that was yesterday. One of those new laws apply to South Dakota drivers who are between the ages of 14 and 18. Dan Lusk is the Deputy Secretary for the Department of Public Safety. He's with us to help us get a better understanding of this law. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Chris, thank you. This is Dan Lusk, and we appreciate you taking the time to visit with us today about these new changes to our teen driving laws that are the result of legislation that was proposed and passed by the state legislature in 2020.
Yes, and you're in my head, Dan, because this new law does stem back to the 2020 state legislature and Senate Bill 113 specifically. If you go back and read the summary of this bill, it was to revise certain provisions regarding instruction permits and restricted minors' driving permits. If you would, you're here today because I'd like you to help us get a better understanding of the thought process initially that went behind this bill.
Sure. The bill was proposed by the state legislature, and the impetus was to put youth drivers behind the wheel with more instructions before they moved on to their full operator's license. So South Dakota has a three-tiered approach, much like you mentioned. There's an instructional permit, a restricted permit, and an operator's permit. So the impetus behind this bill was a bit more instruction period or time for our youth to be behind the wheel before they moved on to their full operator's license.
And we are going to try to get into those three tiers all individually. But now that this is law today, July the 2nd, let's begin with the instruction permit. Having read this, it seems a little complicated. Can you simplify this for us in a way that we can better understand what's being expected?
Yes, I'll try to do that as briefly as I can. The previous requirements or criteria for eligibility on an instruction permit remain the same. The major changes that have taken place are that a driver must drive on an instruction permit for 180 days now with driver's education or 275 days without driver's education. Previous to the change, those requirements were 90 days with driver's ed or 180 days with without driver's education. So both of those timeframes have been bumped up. And in addition to that, there's been a new requirement added where youth drivers must have 50 hours of parent or guardian supervised driving. 10 hours of that must be at night and 10 hours in inclement weather in order to upgrade to their restricted permit. So we have longer drive times and 50 hours required supervised training in nighttime conditions and inclement weather. And a parent would have to sign off affirming that they've spent those 50 hours in those driving conditions with their student when they or their child when they go to upgrade to their restricted permit.
This extension of driving days, in my thought process, Dan, is simply just to better prepare our South Dakota young drivers to operate this motor vehicle.
Yeah, that's a good assumption.
Now, if I'm understanding right what you just said, driver's ed is not a requirement, but without it, the driver is going to need 95 extra days on the permit than the driver who took driver's ed. Is this really because the student who took driver's ed just has that leg up with more experience with a trained professional?
That's correct. With driver's ed, you wouldn't have to drive quite as long behind the wheel, supervised with a parent before you're able to upgrade. So you would go from the new requirement without driver's ed is 275 days. That's been increased again from 180 to 275 days without driver's ed.
Let's now get into tier two, the restricted permits. What's changed there?
So the restricted permits, this is very significant, and I would just also reiterate here that we really encourage teen drivers and their parents, if they have not already done so, to review these new requirements and really learn how they're going to impact their young driver. The restricted permit cannot upgrade to an operator's license without having had gone through the instructional and the restricted permit requirements. So anyone under age 18 must hold a restricted permit for 6 months now and meet all of the other requirements before upgrading to a full operator's license. Most important to note here is anyone driving on a restricted permit cannot have any passengers in their vehicle outside their immediate family or household for 6 months from the initial permit issuance date. And also, anyone who has driven on a restricted permit for 6 months or more may only have one passenger outside their immediate family or household. So they cannot have any passengers for that first 6 months. After 6 months, they can only have one passenger outside their immediate family or household until they upgrade to their operator's license.
I'm really curious if you know what the violation is if they're caught with passengers and they shouldn't have them. What happens to the driver?
You know, I'm not going to give you an answer on that. I'm not sure on the specifics on the citations at this point, so I apologize for that.
No, fair enough. The website you want to go to, by the way, is dps.sd.gov for more information on this. It's a lot of information to throw at you all at once, but it's very, very important for you to check out the information in black and white for yourself. Again, that website is dp, as in Paul, s.sd.gov. In the remaining minute we have, Dan, has anything changed as far as requirements for a driver in South Dakota to get an operator license?
An operator's license, you must be 16 years of age. You must have met the requirements of an instruction permit and driven on a restricted permit for a minimum of 6 months.
Minimum of 6 months. These laws are in effect, and they are rather important. And so I suggest you go to that website again, dps.sd.gov. Anything else we need to mention, Dan, before I let you go?
One last thing, Chris. I would just also want to mention that it's important for everyone to understand that with this new law, that there is no grandfathering of any of the requirements prior to this. So it's very important for people to know that if they hadn't done what they needed to do to upgrade their licenses prior to July 1, that the new requirements are in effect regardless of which tier of a license you held.
Dan Lusk is South Dakota's Deputy Secretary for the Department of Public Safety. Dan, thank you so much for being here today with your insight on helping us better understand this new law.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
After the break, a partnership between the South Dakota Symphony and Augustana's School of Music poses to be a very beneficial partnership for both the musicians and students. Delta David Geyer and Peter Folliard are with us. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Miss something on SDPB? Sign up for the SDPB Morning Report. Get the reporting you love straight to your email twice a week. Go more in depth with our statewide coverage, and don't miss critical segments from shows like In the Moment and South Dakota Focus. It's the news you can use, free from clutter, and best of all, free of charge. To sign up for the morning report, visit sdpb.org/news and scroll to the bottom.
Program funding by a co-op agreement with the U.S. Small Business Administration. If COVID-19 impacted your business, SDCEO Women's Business Center offers complimentary confidential advice. More at bhsu.edu/SDCEO.
Celebrate this July 4th with a special presentation of A Capital 4th. Join your host Vanessa Williams with performances from sea to shining sea, starring Jimmy Buffett, Gladys Knight, Alan Jackson, Cynthia Erivo, Pentatonix, Renee Fleming, Train, Jennifer Nettles, Mickey Guyton, Jimmy Allen, Auli'i Cravalho, and the greatest live fireworks display in the USA. It's A Capital 4th.
Live on SDPB TV and radio, Sunday, July 4th at 7 Central, 6 Mountain.
Program funding is provided by First Dakota National Bank. Before First Dakota filed its charter in 1872, there wasn't a bank in South Dakota. What will be your South Dakota first? FirstDakota.com/first.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Chris Loffrey. Lori Walsh is off today. An artistic partnership between the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra and Augustana's School of Music is an opportunity for those involved to grow and be better educated. Delta David Geyer is the music director for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. He's with us today to get a better idea of what this partnership is capable of. Maestro, thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Peter Folliard is the dean of Augustana's School of Music and the conductor of its orchestra. He's joining us from inside the Kirby Family Studio here in downtown Sioux Falls. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks, Chris. And Maestro, it's good to hear your voice. Where are you right now?
South Carolina.
I thought you were out of the area. Well, it's good to hear your voice. I'm glad we get to talk about this on the air here.
Nice. Let's begin with you, Maestro Geyer. Take us back and tell us about your thoughts on when you first caught wind of this partnership.
Well, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world, right? I mean, we're about to celebrate our centennial season at South Dakota Symphony. And 100 years ago, it started as the orchestra started as the Augustana Town and Gown Symphony. So, meaning town and gown, meaning that we're students at Augustana and also community members that played side by side in the orchestra. So, it's the two institutions have been integral from the beginning. So it's once Augustana officially made us upgrade to a school of music, it made a lot of sense for us to enter into a better and different kind of partnership.
Peter Folliard, your thoughts on the same question.
Oh, my gosh. So what excites me so much about this is I think it's a story about growth. So you have the Augustana Department of Music that has this town and gown orchestra, and the gown meaning the academic robe. You know, when we graduate, we wear those fancy robes. So that's what they meant by that. And then come Maestro, I think it's 1962 from my research, is when the symphony grew to have more professional aspirations separate from the university's mission to educate. And not that these two things are mutually exclusive, but in order for the symphony to grow to the outstanding organization that it is, it needed to lean forward in that way. So out goes the symphony to go grow on its own. Augustana continues to mature and do what it does well in educating collegiate students. And now we're a school of music. Now we're at 100 years. And then we have the conversation about, well, now that we have one entity that's broken into two, matured well, how can these two enrich one another? And so there's no better partner for us to have than the South Dakota Symphony and looking for a partnership like this.
Mr. Geyer, what does this partnership do for the musicians currently of the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra?
Well, I mean, I think all of us who are involved in classical music, we have a sense of mission about what we do, and that we it's a kind of traditional music that we have, that we play, that we desire to pass it on to the next generation. And there's our entire, you know, system of teaching of classical music, whether you're a violinist or pianist or clarinetist, is one of mentorship of, you know, younger musicians. I mean, you don't just, you know, pick up a violin and teach yourself how to play and expect to end up in a symphony orchestra. You need to be mentored by someone who has devoted their life to this in order to play this music. So, and this is the way it's been for hundreds of years. So we receive this mentorship ourselves as musicians, and then we feel a sense of responsibility, but also a desire to pass it on. So what does it do for the musicians of our orchestra? Well, it gives us the opportunity to fulfill that part of our mission.
Peter, I asked the same question of you, only I'm going to flip it to the students of Augustana University. What does it do for them?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity for them to be surrounded by professional musicians. And, you know, this partnership is modeled after what I would say is best practice in the industry. If you look at Juilliard, they have a partnership with the New York Philharmonic. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Curtis Institute, they have a partnership with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And we're in Sioux Falls, and gosh darn it, the South Dakota Symphony and the Augustana School of Music are going to realize the same partnership. So I look at, you know, my own experience at the Eastman School of Music and the Rochester Philharmonic, and what did that integration look like? And just the idea of having, in that case, it was the Rochester Philharmonic rehearsing in the Eastman Kodak Theater. It's the same thing that we'll have the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra performing in Hamry Recital Hall. What does that mean for students? They might bump elbows with Delta David Geyer in the hallway. Mm-hmm. They're going to stand a little taller. You know what? They might hear Dusa Kim practicing before the rehearsal for their orchestra starts in one of our practice rooms. And the idea when you walk into an elite school of music is one that there's sound all the time. And I think that this will increase traffic on our campus and make us a more artistic hub in the community, specifically for music. But our students are going to be surrounded by that next level, more levels than just the next level, by having these professional musicians around them all the time. So what a great opportunity for them to say, oh, I'm dealing with this difficult passage, and you have a hallway conversation with this top-notch artist. So we're doing a best practice in the industry, and that's going to be amazing for our students because I've lived that, and so has Maestro here. It's a win-win.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to In the Moment. I'm Chris Loffrey. Lori Walsh is off today. Delta David Geyer is the music director for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. Peter Folliard is the dean of Augustana School of Music and conductor of its orchestra. They're with us today to talk about this artistic partnership. And you heard Maestro Geyer earlier, Peter, talk about how this was a natural fit. And in preparation for this, I was sitting at my desk going, it's a natural fit. And sure enough, Mr. Geyer took the words right out of my mouth. Talk about your position and how it was a natural fit for you as well, because I'm guessing you're going to answer the same way.
Oh, my gosh. So I remember when I got here in 2017, and I emailed Maestro Geyer, and we sat down and we had a conversation. And there is this rich past between these two organizations. And naturally, as they grew and they developed this independence, it made sense for them to develop their own identities. And then as I grew into this leadership role of the dean, we're looking for strategic ways for us to be able to grow, to be stronger, to be better together. And that's what partnership is all about. And so one of the things that I love about my position is having a friendship with people like David Geyer and Jennifer Teisinger, the executive director. And so Maestro, I'm sure you remember, you know, us getting together, a couple phone conversations, couple Zoom conversations in the pandemic, and then some face-to-face meetings where we got to sit down and talk about how could we realize this. And oh my gosh, was that a fun conversation between the three of us at Maestro Geyer's house, talking about how can we make this partnership something that's vibrant for both of our organizations, more importantly for Sioux Falls and for South Dakota.
Oh, okay, hold the phone. Mr. Geyer, take us back to the to those times. What were those phone calls and Zoom calls like for you?
Well, I'm thrilled to see Augustana taking this step. Because you know every liberal arts school has some sort of department of music, and Augustana has, and you know, there's been a relationship for a long time, but when you upgrade to a school of music, then this is another thing. It's not simply making music available for your student body, but it's being more intentional about recruiting students specifically to study music and to go on a career path in this direction. So, Pete's like the perfect guy to do this. Augustana's made a great choice in Peter Follier, and Pete's got the background to envision this and to make it happen, and he's got the savvy to know how to go about it. So when those conversations started to happen, I think the confidence that I had, that Jennifer Teisinger had in Pete, to be able to bring this thing to fruition was palpable. You know, it's exciting.
You used the word intentional. I love that word. I will use that word in a couple of sentences today in your honor, Maestro Geyer. I have a twofold question here, and I'll start. I'll stay with Mr. Geyer. Has there been any reaction from the musicians from the South Dakota Symphony as far as this partnership is concerned? If so, what have you witnessed?
Well, I just know that our musicians are very supportive of it. I mean, it's happened mostly after our season has ended, so I haven't seen you know our musicians since our last concert on May 1. Mm. So we're not interacting, having conversations. But I know that they're all very happy and excited about this. Like I say, it's not just a gig for us. It's not just a job for us. There's a real sense of mission mm-hmm. behind what we do as classical musicians. So this makes all the sense in the world.
I have no doubts in my mind that they're professionals. They're ready for this. Now let's flip to you, Peter. And you've seen the students and you've talked to the students about this partnership. Tell me what you're seeing.
Yeah.
What's the reaction on campus?
I think it's important we talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of the relationship and mm-hmm. what does this mean in practice as opposed to just an idea. The idea is so powerful, but that's what Maestro Geyer and Jennifer Teisinger and I sat down to really scrub out. And also Susie O'Mara Hernis, I don't know if she's listening, but a huge shout out to her in working out the logistical kind of contract work that we needed to do to make sure that this was something that lasts beyond the personalities that we have in place right now. But so what this means for our students is that if you declare a major in music, you are going to study in the instrumental side. You're going to study with an active professional in your community. Mm-hmm. The opportunities that are embedded with that long term as we grow the talent pool that we have at Augustana is the opportunity to grow the substitute musician pool at the South Dakota Symphony. Now, Maestro Geyer, I'm not saying you need to employ these musicians, but they can go through the audition process, but they're going to be coached by the person who's sitting in that principal chair. That's amazing. And just to know that that opportunity is there, it puts the carrot in front of the stick and makes the horse run. And I mean that, you know, the student is the horse here, mm-hmm. and this is a great golden opportunity for them to chase after. But because they can see it now, because it's really... we've set up those two things right next to each other, and it's up to them to fill the gap. The opportunity and ability and reason to be motivated is right there for grabbing them. So that's exciting. And I can share on the faculty side, I am hearing from some of the musicians saying, Dr. Farid, it would be wonderful if we're thinking about this chamber music concert. Could we host this at Augustana University? And this whole partnership opens up the opportunity to say, absolutely, we want to host these musicians on our campus again so that Augustana also becomes this artistic and musical hub beyond outside of downtown Sioux Falls. So we're really excited about this. Students are excited. And Maestro, I hope this is just the beginning from what we see here. I can't wait to talk in a year as we evaluate this.
Yeah, that'll be important.
Moving forward in the couple of minutes we have left, I'm pretty sure I'm excited about this. Just sitting here in the, with the two of you talking about this, I'm ready to go with this, and I'm not even involved. But here we go. What's the end goal, Maestro Geyer, if you will, of this partnership? I'll start with you.
I see it as a broadening and a deepening of the musical community at Sioux Falls. I mean, I've said many times before, I stand on the shoulders of visionaries who, not just that started the South Dakota Symphony, but those, like Pete said, like there was a real push to professionalize the orchestra in the 60s and the 70s and the concert hall and all of that. So it's, we're trying to draw people to the region, professional musicians to have a real active artistic and musical community in Sioux Falls. And we want to contribute to that. So this is raising up the next generation is a big part of that.
Peter Follier, do you get the last word in the last minute we have? Talk about this partnership, and you're jazzed about it. And what is the end goal for you?
The future for this is for me lifting up. You know, I have to start with Augustana and the School of Music and the students and the opportunity, but even more so it's Sioux Falls, and even more so it's South Dakota, and even more so it's the Midwest. Maestro Geyer and I are not originally from here, and there are things that we know would be helpful, enriching for a community like Sioux Falls that is so growth-minded, that is so artistically invested and supportive. But there need to be these key places, these key partnerships in place in order to make it to the next level and to the next level and to the next level. So as Sioux Falls and as South Dakota and as the Midwest continues to grow, this is, I think, a monumental piece in making us, again, a hub, a centerpiece, a central location for people to say, oh, this is a very vibrant arts community. So, like I said, beyond excited, very grateful to Maestro Geyer for his partnership here and friendship.
Delta David Geyer is the music director for the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra. We really appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Peter Follier, Dean of Augustana School of Music and conductor of its orchestra, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And now, let's take a moment for poetry from Studio 47.
This is poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Andrew Marvell. Marvell was born on the 31st of March, 1621, in Winestead, England. He was educated at Hull Grammar School, and at the age of 13, he attended Trinity College, Cambridge, where he received his BA a few years later. Throughout his life, Marvell was a satirist, a poet, and a politician. In fact, he served in the House of Commons a number of times. A close friend of famed John Milton, Marvell was also part of London's Shipmasters Guild, which at this point in time was beginning to bring in immense plundered wealth from colonies all over the world. He died on August 16th, 1678, in London, very suddenly. So suddenly, in fact, that some believed that he had been poisoned by his enemies. Today's poem is To His Coy Mistress. Marvell is considered one of the Carpe Diem poets. Carpe Diem, as you may know, means to seize the day, although to pluck the day is a better translation of that Latin phrase. Carpe Diem poems are about making the most of the present moment, and in this particular poem, the narrator, who is almost certainly Marvell himself, is trying to get a woman to sleep with him. It is worth noting that, at this point in history, if she did sleep with him, she would be a ruined woman. She would be an outcast. So we have a poem that, on one level, is about a man trying to convince a woman to sleep with him, and yet, on another level, it is a poem about making the most of the moment. This, then, is To His Coy Mistress by Andrew Marvell. Had we but world enough and time, this coyness, lady, were no crime. We would sit down and think which way to walk and pass our long love's day. thou by the Indian Ganges side shouldst rubies find, and I by the tide of Humber would complain. I would love you 10 years before the flood, and you should, if you please, refuse till the conversion of the Jews. My vegetable love should grow vaster than empires and more slow. 100 years should go to praise thine eyes and on thy forehead gaze, 200 to adorn each breast, but 30,000 to the rest, an age at least to every part, and the last age should show your heart. For, lady, you deserve this state, nor would I love at a lower rate. But at my back I always hear time's winged chariot hurry near, and yonder all before us lie deserts of vast eternity. Thy beauty shall no more be found, nor in thy marble vault shall sound my echoing song. Then worms shall try that long-preserved virginity, and your quaint honor turn to dust, and into ashes all my lust. The grave's a fine and private place, but none, I think, do there embrace. Now therefore, while the youthful hue sits on thy skin like morning dew, and while thy willing soul transpires at every pore with instant fires, now let us sport us while we may, and now, like amorous birds of prey, rather at once our time devour than languish in this slow-chapped power. Let us roll all our strength and all our sweetness up into one ball and tear our pleasures with rough strife through the iron gates of life. Thus, though we cannot make our sun stand still, yet we will make him run.
Poetry from Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks. This episode was recorded at Augustana University and produced by Peter Folliard. Thank you for listening.
You can find more poetry from Studio 47 by visiting ps47.org. Coming up, an introduction of historian Ben Jones and the South Dakota Historical Society's History 605 podcast. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
This week on Science Friday, while COVID variants spread, the vaccines are still working.
The vaccines are holding their own against the Delta variant, and that is that they are protecting people, even people with breakthrough infections, from becoming seriously ill and from dying.
Plus, your gardening problem solved.
I am a basal failure.
It's all on the next Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain.
Program funding is provided by Sanford Underground Research Facility, hosting world-leading research in physics and other disciplines. Learn more about America's Underground Science Laboratory at sanfordlab.org.
Sanford Underground Research Facility's Neutrino Day Star Chronicles is going virtual July 9th and 10th. In our virtual town, you can talk with scientists, engineers, and educators. Explore interactive activities, experience some weird science, take virtual tours, and visit the art gallery and library. At our finale, learn about native ways of understanding the stars with keynote speaker Annette Lee. Join the fun. Go to neutrinoday.com.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
Diversity and Minority Affairs reporting on SDPB is supported by Rapid City Rotary Club and the family of Dr. Ashok Kumar.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Chris Loffrey, in today for Lori Walsh. A new local podcast called History 605 explores the history of South Dakota, the Northern Great Plains, and the Midwest. South Dakota's state historian Ben Jones serves as the host and visits with guests about their books, museum exhibits, and artifacts, along with historic sites in the state and region. Ben grew up in Sioux Falls and DeSmet, served in various locations around the world while in the U.S. Air Force. He returned to South Dakota to become Dean of Arts and Sciences at Dakota State University, then served as South Dakota's 15th Secretary of Education. Along the way, he earned his Ph.D. in history and enjoys sharing history insights with all of you. And joins us now, Ben. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Chris. Thanks for having me.
First off, thank you for your role in protecting our nation's independence as we're about to celebrate the 4th of July. We appreciate that.
Sure, you're welcome.
Let's get to know you just a little bit better. When did you first realize that history was your thing and that you wanted to make this a bigger part of your life?
When I went to SDSU, I wanted to be an astronaut.
Oh my, okay.
And I couldn't hack the calculus. And so
fair enough.
I, after a lot of walking around campus, wondering what the heck I was going to do, and discussing things with my mom and my parents, she said, you really ought to think about history.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on an Air Force ROTC scholarship and kind of had a job lined up, so it made the choice easy to do something that I really liked. And often, while serving in the Air Force, I wound up using the degree in many ways, and so it proved to be a win-win for everybody involved.
Let's talk about the podcast. Take us back to the days when this was just a thought. What did it take to get it to where it is today?
Yeah. So when I started at the Historical Society in December, one of the things that we wanted to do was to sort out how to reach more people, to include more people, because I would often think about we're trying to get past people having to come to us and figure out ways to be more available, more open. And, of course, the podcast idea kind of seemed to be a natural fit for people in this internet on-demand world. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to be able to be available when they're able to listen and to visit you. And so a podcast seemed like a natural fit and a way to go. And so we began to think about how to put one together, what might the format be. And so after 5-6 months of thinking and working with good folks at Public Broadcasting, mm-hmm. we were able to put the show together.
In the latest episode, you visit with historian David Wolfe about his new book, The Savior of Deadwood.
Right.
And in that episode, there are really a bunch of interesting, nuggets of information. and I found this part where Wolfe talks about this window of violence during the gold rush. Really interesting. Let's take a quick listen.
Sure. People are, you know, outside the law. They're violating federal law. Then mm-hmm. Once the gold rush is really going hot, and that's the summer of 1876 and 1877, it drags in all the ne'er-do-wells, the bummers, and all, you know, mm-hmm. The Wild Bill Hickoks, the Calamity James, they're up there hanging out. And the crowd just goes to hell. You know, everything goes downhill.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of trouble. And it really starts, you know, when Wild Bill is shot, you know, you always get the summer of 76. It's all killings and stuff, and Wild Bill is part of the killing in the middle of it. No, you look at it, he's really the second guy killed.
Yeah.
So he's at the tip of it. And then August of 1876 is a pretty ugly month. And then it dies down in the winters, and a lot of bad people leave in the winter because they don't want to hang around in the winter.
Right.
And then they come back in 77. And 77 was probably more violent overall. It doesn't get the press. The days of 77 is not what we hear about.
Right.
But then by 78, you know, in February 77, federal authority comes in. State is part of the Dakota Territory. And more law enforcement, Bullock's a sheriff, and things start to calm down by 78.
Right.
Now, in that piece, we hear David mention that Wild Bill was the second person to be killed during that era. And it's really stuff like that I think makes this podcast interesting. What are some of your favorite takeaways from this most recent episode?
Well, I think what David's book does is really contextualizes America and the American West in 1876. Mm-hmm. And I think his use of sources and then bringing in other things that are going on really helps you understand what's in the mind of the people at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, you know, that clip you just played, the ne'er-do-wells, the folks who are hanging around, and then, no pun intended, he says, things kind of die down when winter comes. They're very concerned about not only the weather and being in the northern Black Hills and avoiding the winter weather that might come, but they're also concerned about the fact that they're there illegally, and they all know that,
mm-hmm.
and that there's no law enforcement. And then the Army has been, while trying to stop them from coming into the reservation territory in that first summer of 1875 and a little bit in 1876, by then Grant's kind of stuck, and Professor Wolfe goes through what leads to a change of decision in the Grant administration about all that. And so all that context, oh, and by the way, a few hours car drive today away from where Deadwood is, the Army's most elite combat unit just gets wiped out. And and that's all happening just a month and a half before Hickok is murdered in this gunfight and in the bar in at the number 10 saloon. Meanwhile, there's a presidential election going on, and the nation's celebrating its 100th centennial. So there's a lot when you think about, when you think in time or across time, and then you kind of put yourself in that place, I think that's some of the most rewarding ways to think about history, is to kind of put yourself in there, in that place in time, and to think about what they have to go through and the things that they're dealing with.
The podcast is called History 605. It explores the history of South Dakota, the Northern Great Plains, and the Midwest. It can be found on Spotify, iTunes, and, of course, at listen.sdpb.org. I believe they drop twice a month. Is that right?
That's right. On Mondays, twice a month.
Our guest today has been historian Ben Jones. We really, really look forward to hearing this podcast as the weeks go on. And thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Dallas Chief Eagle is a member of the Rosebud Lakota Nation and a master hoop dancer. For Chief Eagle, the hoop dance is more than a dance. It's a way of keeping Lakota traditions alive. His hoops represent the diversity of life. He visits with Apollonia Davalos of the Levitt at the Falls to further explain the traditions and the Plains Indian worldview reflected through the music and dance on this week's episode of Music Matters.
We were only born with a brain, a heart, a body, and a spirit. And our people were very good at developing songs and a language and a way of life that was very close to nature in the past. But all that was interrupted. So what we are doing ourselves is we are re-emerging that part of our culture in our schools and in our homes. We have a lot of broken hoops among our people. And the only way we can see out of it is to practice how to navigate oneself. And that's why we use Grandpa Rock. Is, you know, in so many of, in our culture, in so many ways, we use the stones in our teaching. Because if the eagle has a spirit, the horse has a spirit, you have a spirit. You know, how does this rock teach us? Well, it's not moving, so we're not going to move. We're not going to make noise. And if we're born with a brain, a body, a heart, and a spirit, well, we want our spirit to lead, so Grandpa Rock's going to teach us. So we sit around the buffalo robe, and we sit with the Grandpa Rock, and then I teach the students how to turn off all the channels in their brain. We're going to turn it off, and then what we're going to do is go into spirit. All the students are sitting around, keeping their eyes on Grandpa Rock. We're going to give our brain a rest. You have to stop thinking, stop feeling, stop your body, and just stare at Grandpa Rock for one whole minute. And then after the minute, I ask the students, well, did your brain start to think? They say, yeah. Did you make it stop? Yeah. Well, eventually, throughout the four lessons, they can turn off their brain completely, and then their spirit takes over. See, the spirit gets most of the attention, and the spirit will help us deal with the trauma or the hurt, the pain, the grief. It will help us through those very difficult, challenging times. Also, if we want to have bigger, positive challenges too, we want our spirit involved in that too. The more we're involved with teaching our spirit to be part of the process, our daily processes with one another is very important. We start seeing other people in nature as spirits, and we treat them that way. You know, we do not distance ourselves from being close to the people and around us. And we have to get rid of our busyness sometimes. Some of us are overwhelmed with busyness here or sadness here, or pain or suffering, but we need to know how to manage that so that we can give the best of who we are, which is the Spirit, to one another and our families, communities, and relatives out there. So that's what Grandpa Ruck teaches us. They've been around for thousands of years, being silent, not moving this, not moving their bodies, and allowing the Spirit to be one of the chief navigators in our lives. And it reduces our fears. And this is really good for hoop dancing, because all the children want to hoop dance then. And I say, how do you get rid of your fears? Well, we're going to practice doing this minute exercise now, and then we're going to hoop dance. And give the best, put the Spirit in our hoop dance. That's how you build character, is you teach people how to use their gifts that they were born with. When I do my artists in residencies and some of my touring arts, I found a way to use the hoop where all children can hoop dance. You ask children to go maybe break dance or do other dances, and they're too bashful. But with the hoop, it's like, well, so don't worry about how you dance. Just show your hoop. Just concentrate on the hoop. And I've never met a child, whether they had a disability or some kind of a problem, that when they hoop dancing, they get rid of their shyness, and they just come out there. And I say, just keep that hoop moving, and then your dance steps will just come. And usually, well, I say it's hoop dancing, it's not hoop standing around. So they get out there and they dance. And the more hoops they use, the more I teach them to use more hoops. Maybe they're going up to 7 hoops and in front of the public, the whole school, or the hoop, or the big audience like we had today. You know, you're going to be shining and people are going to be looking. But one thing for sure, just keep moving, because if you stop moving and you freeze and everybody else is moving and you're not moving, where do you think the audience eye is going to go? Like, me. Well, you don't want to stand out like a sore thumb. So even if you make a mistake in life, you got to keep going, keep moving.
Music Matters. You can find these episodes on SDPB's Facebook page and our YouTube channel. That is all the time we have for today's show. Special thank you to Crystal Schoenbauer for her assistance. Thank you to all of our guests who appeared on today's show as well. Please know that we are also a podcast. Find us by searching In the Moment or Lori Walsh wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow In the Moment on YouTube. You'll find past interviews with researchers, artists, politicians, and so much more. For Lori Walsh, Josh Heyer, and Steve Zwempke, I'm Chris Loffrey. From all of us at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, have yourself a very safe but memorable 4th of July holiday.